It is hot up here. My name is Jeffrey, and I'm an alcoholic still. Trudging the road to happy destiny. It's about putting yourself out there and being heard and seen. I was at the Wednesday night meeting, and our speaker today stood up in front of one of the largest Wednesday night meetings we've ever had and put herself out there. Brenda stood up and said, "If you see me in the lobby, grab me. I want to do lunch. If you see me floating around, say hello." And that's what this is all about. And it's about putting yourself out there and being seen and heard. And what I thought was really cool about the whole week while getting to know Brenda was she had never seen the Atlantic Ocean. And here we are, and she's going to be sharing her experience, strength, and hope in front of the Atlantic Ocean. And at this time, I'd like to introduce Brenda S.
God, I offer myself to you to build with me and to do with me as you will. Relieve me of the bondage of self, that I may better do your will. Take away my difficulties. That victory over them may bear witness to those I will help, of your power, your love, and your way of life. May I do your will always. My name is Brenda. I'm a recovering lesbian, Hispanic, Catholic, alcoholic, drug addict, full-figured woman. In case you missed it, the last thing was full-figured. We do have a timeout corner. Es imposible decirles el gusto que me da en estar aquí con ustedes ahora. Le doy gracias primeramente a Dios por la vida que me ha concedido. Tengo mucho gusto de estar aquí con ustedes y con su permiso voy a hablar en inglés. What's the problem? For those of you who don't speak Spanish, I highly recommend it. I'd like to thank the committee for the chance to come out here. I'd never been to Florida and never seen the Atlantic, and I want you to know the other night when I got here, I like went out on the beach of the sand thing, you know, under your feet, and I got in the water because I thought I didn't come this far to be on the beach, just on the sand. And I want you to know though, I started to get in the water and every National Geographic special I had ever seen came. (Laughter) And this little voice in my head said, Brenda, tell me you did not come this far to be afraid. And so I got all up in there, and God filled every pore of my soul. And I want you to know I have proof, because this weekend I have tasted God, and He's salty. Y'all need to clean that up. That was nasty. We got some chlorine in Texas. I do want to say thanks. I showed up to the meeting on Wednesday, and I don't know you guys, and you hang out together, and I know you come to conferences and stuff, and I didn't get the opportunity to do that because God didn't let me look up from my tablet the first 12 years I was sober. And so when I got here, I was sitting in that chair, and I usually get to speak on Sunday. And so I go the whole weekend, and most times people don't know me, and then when they decide maybe they like me, it's time for us to go home. The high point to that is if they decide they don't like me, it's time for us to go home. But I thought, I was sitting in my chair and thought, you know what, Brenda, it would be what you would require of the women that you sponsor. If it's good enough for them, and they deserve what they get from that, you deserve it. Get up off your ass. And so I stood up and I said, if you know me, you know, say hi. If you don't know me, pretend like you do. You know, so I want to thank those women who saw me at Walgreens later. Yeah, you need help. I'm standing in Walgreens after that happened, and they're like, Brenda! And I'm like, who the hell knows me at Walgreens in Florida? So not only did they say hello, they introduced me to everybody in their group, and as people walked into Walgreens, they're like, hi, this is Brenda, do you know her? This is Brenda, do you know? The clerks were like, my, she's somebody important. To my two friends from Philly, who invited me to lunch the other day, and that was just absolutely marvelous. To the people from Key West that invited me to dinner last night, thank you very, very much. Your city should be proud to have you as its citizens. Thank you. I'd like to thank the other speakers. Heather, I just wanted to inform you that the gorilla put me down the day before I got on a plane to come here. So thank you. Thank you very much for what you brought. To Lila, who convinced me that all the work I've been doing has amounted to, as she so eloquently put it, bullshit. I'm working through it, which I still understand is bullshit, but I'd like to thank Cornerstone, my home group in Dallas. I got a chance to go out to Los Angeles and see the Pacific Ocean for the first time last summer. And I thought, you know what? I might be able to get used to this. This is some good stuff. And I thought it was all of that, except I got back to my home group and we were electing servants, right? And so I showed up, you know, wanting to be of service, and I got nominated for two or three things, and I'd leave the room, they'd vote, I'd come back, I'd lost. And so, you know, I got to go out to L.A., but I can't get a service position in my home group. I'd like to thank my Tuesday night study group of women that I get together with every Tuesday night to study the big book and the 12 and 12. Because some of what's shared in the meetings is in there and the rest of it isn't. And if I don't read the book, I don't know which is which. And so I am very grateful to those women. I'm grateful to my sponsor who has 20 years in AA, 22 in Al-Anon. You know, I love the guy. He. One day I was in a heated argument with him because, you know, I am. And so I'm like sitting across from him and I said, do you understand that I would rather pull a tooth than do what you just suggested? To which he said, do you understand you can do that a few times over 30 times and then what are you going to do? I was talking to him just last week and he said, Brenda, you know, you're trying to make something work that isn't working. And that's the equivalent of trying to teach a pig how to sing. It's a waste of time and you're annoying the pig. So it just so happens that one of the women I sponsor had emailed me after I got off the phone with him, and I wrote her and I said, do you know what my sponsor said to me? I said, he said, it's like, I'm you know, wasting my time and annoying the pig. And what the hell does he know anyway? Love you, Brenda. And send it. And she emailed back. She goes, yeah, what the hell does he know? The pig in Charlotte's Web could sing. Now you have an idea of what I'm working with. I have four women I currently sponsor because four is as many as I can fit in. We read out of the 12 and 12. We read out of the big book. They do the writing. They share it with me. We surrender to God. We go on to the next step out of the book. You know, on any given week, I can read the second step 8 times. You know, it just, and that's the work that I did when I got sober, and it's the work that they do. I have a woman who came to me right after I moved to Dallas. I've only been in Dallas for 2 years. I was in a little town called San Angelo, Texas before then. You know, I shared with somebody there were two gay people and one of us left. The other one's still on a prayer list. So anyway, this girl comes to me. She said, hi, I need for you to be my sponsor. I heard you had a really good connection with God and I want a baby. So I told her, I said, you know what, I don't know about any of that. I do know about working the steps. Why don't we do that and we'll just leave everything else in God's hands. And about 5 months ago, we welcomed into the world a little bundle of joy named Mia Grace. Absolutely. Yay! One of the other women I sponsor called me on New Year's Eve and she said, Brenda, she said, the reason I asked you to be my sponsor is because I don't know how to cry and you're really good at it. She goes, I just want to cry. And she just celebrated 4 years here in February, and she hasn't stopped crying since. Anyway, and I share those stories with you about the women I sponsor because what I'm going to talk about today is relationships and me and being sober and being an Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm going to talk about love and forgiveness and hope and letting go and trying and messing it up. I'm going to talk about me. And the reason I throw that out there is because if you don't want to hear any of that, slip out, you know? Nobody will notice. We all think you need to go pee and you're out of here. There was a couple guys here the other day and they're like, God, we don't know whether to stay for the Sunday speaker. Do you know anything about her? And I'm like, I think she's pretty good. I said, I would stay if I were you. I don't talk a lot about what it was like because I'm assuming you got that part down. I was out in San Francisco and I got on the little DART train, the little public transportation thing, and a really, really intoxicated African-American woman got on the bus and she came over to me and she says, I am Jesus Christ. I said, it's nice to meet you. I mean, what are you going to do? No, you're not, you're a liar. she starts to scream obscenities at me. And I only share that with you because when I share my story, I used to be worried about cussing from behind the podium, but I met Jesus and she has a foul mouth. I'm one of 9 kids. I have 6 sisters, 2 brothers, 1 mom, 1 dad. We grew up in a little town named Denial. I have 23 nephews and nieces, 14 great nephews and nieces, and those kids think I created chocolate. I drank because I didn't know what else to do. When life pushed up against me, I just took a drink. And it worked. It worked beautifully, and it worked for a really long time. And my drunkalogue is about 3 sentences long. Okay, here it is. Don't miss it if you're the person who needs it. I drank at the beginning to feel good. Then I started drinking to feel normal. And at the end, I was drinking to not feel at all. Now, if you understand that, there's nothing else I can tell you. If you don't, stay here until you do. All I knew is that I was in junior high and high school. I used to go to school so I could get some sleep. I was out running around. I took it up at the age of 12, you know, in the 6th grade. I was drinking. I don't remember much of what happened after that. You know, I come from a long line of drinkers, surprisingly enough. And I knew that when I drank, it made everything feel like it was all right. And so, fast forward, I'm in high school. I graduate from high school, and it's one 24-hour party. Over and over and over and over again, you know, and things are screwed up. I don't really know how to look at people and be in relationships with them, and I didn't care, you know. Things with my dad were pretty rough, you know. He looked at me at one point and said, "You know what? When your mother dies, I better not see one tear come out of your eye, or I'm gonna knock every goddamn tooth out of your mouth." And I got that. I understood that. And I said, that's good with me. I don't care. You know, and I had made life hard because they wanted me to be their daughter. And I turned out to be something else. And I want you to know, I lost a lot of things in alcoholism, in active alcoholism. But the worst thing that ever happened to me is that I became somebody besides my mother and my father's daughter. And so I'm going on and on and on, and I can't do it anymore. I am 24 years old at the bottom, and I don't know what else to do. Well, I was looking through the phone book or something, God knows why, and I found a treatment facility, and I thought, they'll come get my dad. And I called him and I said, you know, I'm calling because my daddy's got a drinking problem and he hasn't drank for a really long time, but he's been miserable and I was just wondering, could you come get him? And the lady said, wow, that's cute. What are you doing? And I said, well, what are you talking about? She said, well, what are you doing? And I said, well, nothing. She said, well, she goes, on Tuesdays we have family day. Why don't you come to the treatment center and just kind of hang out, you know? Anybody's welcomed. And I thought, they probably want money. You know, so I took my checkbook and off I went on Tuesday to go to this place. And they were having family day and they were doing role play. And so I'd walk around and I'd ask people, do you have family here? No. Do you have family here? No. Yeah. Okay, I'm going to be your family. It was some guy like a Hell's Angels motorcycle dude, you know. And you know, I found myself in heated discussions with him. We were working through issues and I'd never seen him before. But I went every Tuesday for a month because they needed me. And when I got done with that, the lady said, you want to go to a meeting? And I'm like, what? meeting, and she said, we go to a meeting, and everybody goes, and there's an AA meeting, and there's an Al-Anon meeting across the hall, so you can go over there if you want. I said, no, thank you. She said, okay, good, get in the van. If you're new and anybody says get in the van, do not get in the van. So I got in the van and we went to the meeting, and I went to the Al-Anon meeting, and they went over there, and we did this for a little while, and then I ran into the van lady a couple of days later, and I said, I want to ask you something. I said, my sister made me really mad and I didn't want to drink, and I took a drink, and I don't know what that means. She said, oh. I said, and then the day after that, my sister made me mad and I didn't want to drink, and I went and got a drink and I drank it, and I don't know what that means. She said, oh. She said, do me a favor. Now, we're sitting in the lobby of the AA room on the couch. There's, I don't know, 50, 60 people standing there. She says, why don't you say, my name is Brenda and I'm an alcoholic. And I said, because it's not the truth. She said, it doesn't matter. Say it anyway. Like, now I was concerned with the truth, right? So after a little while, I said, my name is Brenda and I'm an alcoholic. And everything came crashing down around me, man. I started sobbing because I knew that it was a truth. I knew it. I knew it. And then I didn't know what else to do. Now what? Now what? And so what happened is, she said, there's a meeting here tomorrow. It's a women's meeting. I'd like for you to come. Here's my phone number and I'll be here. And I want you to know, I looked at her like, golly, you need help. Get the hell away from me. Thank you very much. So I took her number, and like 12 times I started to pick up the phone to tell her, I can't go tonight, the dog is sick. Which meant I needed to run out and get a dog. Anyway, so I showed up to the meeting because I didn't know what women alcoholics look like. So I went to the meeting and I got as far as the door, and she said, I brought you this far. If you're coming in, you got to come in alone. And I stepped into Alcoholics Anonymous. And when that meeting was over, this woman comes up to me. She says, hi, my name is Pam, and we're going to the Kettle to eat dinner. We were wondering, would you like to come? And all of a sudden, I looked around, and I said, I can't go. Yes. She said, good. She said, get in the van. Hey, but you know what? You can't pull that crap on me two times. I said, you know what? I have my car. I'm going to get in my car and I'm going to meet you there. She said, get in the van. And I'm thinking, what the hell happened to, hi, my name is Pam. So I got in the van and we went to the Kettle. And it's a Friday night and I'm thinking, dear God, please don't let any of my friends see me up in here. I mean, what is this, like an Avon convention or something? And at one point I looked down and I saw 12 white women sitting at this table, and I thought, man, the image of the Last Supper flashed right in front of me. So I started going AA. I started going AA because I looked around and realized you didn't have a leader. I am not kidding. I went home and I told my mom, I said, Mom, they said for me to come back. I said, they don't have anybody like that's in charge, and I think they're going to ask me. And my mom says, good, you should go back. So I did. I went to AA like I was running for office. Hi, welcome to AA. Hello, welcome to AA. Now the whole time I'm miserable. You know, I'm dying. I don't want what you have, and it's my job to let you know I don't want it. So I would come to meetings and I'd bring my headphones. As soon as the meeting started, I'd put them on. And that would, like, I don't know why, piss some people off. And so when I knew that they were good and pissed, I'd bring my headphones and the newspaper. Now, they weren't on, but I couldn't let you know that. And I was listening to everything that was being said. And then they'd ask me to share. Somebody who was new asked me to share. And I'm like, well, I won't tell you what I said, but it was not spiritual in nature. And I just kept showing up and just kept going there and, you know, trying to do the best I can. And this woman comes up to me, Miss Pam. She comes up to me. She says, here's my phone number. You need a sponsor. And it's me. You know, and I looked at her and I said, what the hell is your problem? You know, why would you not want to sponsor me? She says, call me. I said, when do I call you? She said, call me anytime you have an idea. Now, I thought I should be offended by that, but I didn't know how come. So I'm going to meetings, I'm pissed, I don't want to be there, I don't like you, you don't like me, that's working for me, man, you know, and I would like look up at the steps, but there was no way I was asking any questions. And one day after a meeting, a woman comes over, she goes, come here. So I walked over there, I said, what? She said, I need for you to pick up all of the glass ashtrays and empty them out over there in that bucket, and then we're going to wash those out. And I thought, oh, it's because I'm brown. And we're going to deal with this today. Yeah, we are. So I went to the furthest corner of the AA room. I picked up a big glass ashtray. Pile this high, because we don't smoke a little in AA. And I picked it up, and I flung it the distance of the AA room. Ashes and cigarettes went everywhere. For you sports fans, I made it. She goes, come here. I thought, I'm going to kick your ass. I am on my way over there, okay? So I like get this far from her face, and I say, you want something with me? She said, yeah. She said, we're not going to start you off with the ashtrays. She said, why don't you pick up the styrofoam coffee cups? I felt like I had been demoted. So I keep going to meetings and I'm making friends, and there's this guy there and he's got 2 years. His name is Pat, and he's got 2 years, and I had managed about 30 days now or something. And I said, Pat, I said, something's wrong with me, man. I said, something's wrong with me because I've been sober like 30 days already, and I'm kind of listening and I'm doing the best I can. And, you know, I'm, you know, trying to get promoted to ashtrays, and I want to drink. I want to drink and I don't know what to do. And he said, I have been exactly where you are. He said, if you want to take a drink, I know exactly what you need to do. And I said, oh, thank God. I said, what is it? He said, if you feel like drinking and you don't want to, what you need to do is you need to sleep with me. Well, I hadn't read the book. I didn't know was that in there. So I went to the lobby and I picked up the phone and I'm going, "Hi, Pam, this is Brenda. I'm at the AA club." And I was telling Pat that I really wanted to drink. And he said if I wanted to drink that I needed to sleep with him. And that sounded like an idea. Okay. It's for you. Hey, I think the women in that group killed him. I never saw him again. Ever. That was my home group for like 10 years, and I never saw him. So I'm going to meetings. I'm doing the best I can. I'm you know, I stopped bringing the headphones. And I accidentally somehow, I don't know, I said the third step prayer. I didn't mean it. It doesn't matter. And somehow I ended up enrolled in college. With like less than like 6 months. I mean, I had like 60 days or something, and I'm enrolled in college. And I don't know, I just looked at the little book. I don't even know who paid. I just went to classes over and over and over and followed the little book. I picked the degree that required the least amount of math because things had never added up for me. And so I start working on that, and I'm trying to put things together. And for my third birthday, I gave myself permission to finish my first amends list. You know, and I'm doing it as I know how, as clumsy and recklessly and messy and all of that, man. But I'm doing the best I can. And I want you to know the best I can is enough. The only wrong way to do the steps is to leave them undone. Oh, Lee, I was listening to this guy. He brought his fist up. I'm like, what the hell is that? He'd written it in Hebrew so nobody would ever read it. I'm like, ah. It doesn't matter. Do it. So I'm doing the work, and I got in college, and I'm trying to put my relationships back together with my brothers and sisters. And what had happened there was that they wanted me to be their sister. I took a drink, I left, and I made that about them. And so they were on my amends list. You know, and my dad had figured out how to tell me, you know, if you fuck up one more time, you're the hell out of here. But he didn't figure out that little part about how he was supposed to have picked me up and said, "Brenda, I love you." You know, when you're little and your old man's supposed to pick you up and say, "Of all the little girls that God could have given me, I'm so glad I got you. You're beautiful. I love your eyes." We miss that somehow. We miss that. And so, I'm there, I'm going to college, and they sent me a letter from the university, and the university wrote me and said, "You know, you're 12 hours from graduating. Would you please come file a degree plan?" I don't know, paperwork. So I went, and the morning of graduation, I went on a job interview. I got a degree teaching, by the way. I'm an elementary school teacher by trade. And the morning of graduation, there were 83 people in my graduating class, and three of us got jobs. The morning of graduation, I went on an interview and sat with the principal, and he's like, "I'm looking at your resume, and I see you graduated from high school in 1984, and you started college in, what the hell was it? I graduated in 84, and I started college in 90. He said, what was going on during those 6 years? I looked at him and I said, "You know what? I was busy." He said, "You want the job?" I said, "Yeah." So I took the job. And that night I went to graduation ceremony. And now, I'd been trying to make amends to my brothers and sisters and my nephews and nieces by showing up to all their crap. Violin recitals, you know, little Olympics, Special Olympics. I mean, I had done it all. And I'd, you know, hold up banners and run along the side of the street, you know, and my nephew got his driver's license and I was at the DMV with pom-poms and a cowbell. And they're like, God, she's not drinking? So I show up to the Coliseum in San Angelo, Texas, and I looked up over my left shoulder. It's packed full of people, and I saw my brothers and sisters and my nephews and nieces, and my little nephews and nieces, they got signs that says, she's our aunt. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And so there I am in my cap and gown, the first of 9 children, you know, to graduate from college. And I came across that stage and I looked up and I caught my father's eye. And for the first time in my life, I saw something besides just utter disappointment. And he goes, I said, all right, good. So I'm rocking right along. I'm, you know, trying to help newcomers whether they like it or not. You know, doing the best I can, and I'm just staying sober, and I'm working the steps, and they work. They work, and what happens is that I started to sponsor women, and they brought me to a level of my relationship with God that I couldn't have gotten to without them. I'd pray with them on the phone all the time, you know, God, my Creator, and then they'd repeat it after me. And one day I was at an awards banquet for my kids, and one of the women I sponsor called, and I had really bad reception on the phone, and I said, okay, repeat after me. I said, my Creator. She said, my Creator. I said, I am now willing. She said, I can't hear you. I said, I am now willing. She said, I can't hear you. I said, I am now willing that you should have all of me. Right about the time that 2 of my kids walked by and they're like, woo! You know, crap like that happens to me all the time. I want to talk about what it's like being sober in Alcoholics Anonymous today. Because that's the hard work, really. I mean, how do you put up with a bunch of drunks who all want it their way? When it should be my way. I have to tell you that I work the steps. I'm trying to be better. I'm trying to just be a better person and get it right the first time, which is really funny. But anyway, so I just want you to know it doesn't just fix itself overnight. I was a little over 5 years sober, and I went to the video store to rent a video, and I go out to the register, and I thought it was 99 cents, and the woman says it's $3.29. I said, you know what? You people need to get your crap together. This movie's 99 cents. I don't know what the, you know, while I'm throwing this tirade at the register, the little stock guy goes over, gets the sign, brings it over where it says the movie's $2.99. Well, I did the only sober thing I knew how to do. I said, you know what? I don't want it. I didn't even have to call my sponsor on this one. Before I get to the car, I'm sobbing. Because I'm sober and I'm not that person and I don't want to behave like that. You know, that's not who I am anymore. So I walk back into the store, and snot's flying, I'm crying. Now, I got to wait in line. So I'm in line, and people are like, damn, what were you looking for? You know, do we have it here, you know? So I finally get up to the register and I said, I just want you to know that I'm sorry and I shouldn't have acted like that and I know better. And I just want you to know that I'm sorry. She said, ma'am, I have never seen you before in my life. She says, I think you're looking for Brittany, and she's working in the back of the store now. I was going to say, could you tell her? So I went back to the back of the store, and I did it all over again, and people had stopped shopping. They're like, look, there she goes. Which one's Brittany? Look. You know, and they're like watching me as I'm going through the store, and I go back there and I do it again, and I got out to my car and I sit down in my car, and I'm so grateful that I know how to do something else besides what I knew to do when I got here. That's what I'm grateful for, because I got in my car and I was free, and that's why I drank. I drank because I wanted that feeling. I wanted to feel that I was okay. So it works. It's messy, but it works. You know, I've sat with people who said, I'm not going to make the amends because I'm not ready. If you die, it won't matter. You know, it doesn't matter then. You know what? It doesn't matter now. Do it because I did it because I deserve what I got from making the amends. Do it because you do, not because they do. You know, and I want you to know that I I'm a sober member of Alcoholics Anonymous. And the way I live my life should let you know that. You should know that by the way I am. I'm sober this morning, through and through. I met a guy in the lobby the other day and he looked at me. He said, you have the clearest eyes of anybody I've ever met. Wayne, the taper who needs therapy, by the way, said... But I mean that in a good way. See, it just happens. You know, this poor newcomer was standing there, or somebody was standing there, and Wayne says, shake her hand, your whole right side will sober up. I absolutely love being alive, and nothing is going my way. That is being sober. Nothing. I'm going to finish teaching in May and probably not have a job after that. For 1,000 reasons. I think it's just that my sobriety station's going to change. I don't know. I just have a feeling, this intuitive feeling that I'm awake to now, and I have a feeling that after May I won't have a job. You know, I'm here with you this weekend while the woman that I've shared the last 3 years of my life is at home moving out. It's not a bad thing. I like oranges. She likes apples. I've been trying to convince her about the benefits of orange juice and orange pie and orange croissants and orange crap for 3 years. She doesn't want oranges. She wants apples. So I finally looked at her and I said, you know what? I don't like so much apples. I don't like apples. I don't like apples, and it's finally okay with me that you don't like oranges. This is the first time I've ever been in love with somebody enough to say to them, I want what God wants for you more than I want what I want for you. I've been sober 15 and a half years. I sobered up July the 3rd of 1990. In December, I turned 40 and I'm single. And it's just, it's wonderful to be able to say that to a group of alcoholics and know that it's just a matter of fact and not a commercial. You know what I mean. I absolutely love being sober. Now, if you're like me, when I got here, I wanted to know, is it going to suck? Because I'm not doing all the work if it's going to suck. I'm not. I had the privilege of giving one of the women I sponsor her 7-year chip in February. You know what she said? She got up there and she said, I love my sponsor. She said, my sponsor teeters on the edge of the fourth dimension always. And then she said, and she wants me out there with her. I don't know why the hell you thought that was funny, ma'am. Hey, you know what? Y'all just catch y'all shit going on. I don't care. So I started teaching for the Dallas Independent School District. I originally moved to Dallas. Oh, here's how that happened. 12 and a half years, by the way, if you're 12 years, wake up. Okay? Listen. 12 and a half years, the wheels fell off the mother. I'm not kidding. I'm going to meetings. I'm sponsoring women. I'm taking meetings to institutions. I'm, you know, doing the ashtrays finally. You know, woohoo! I'm doing what I'm supposed to and have no idea what it is that God wants from me. But every day I get up and say, here I am, Brenda sober, reporting for duty. And have no idea what it is that God wants me to do. And one day, I went to Dallas. I was just visiting at the time, and I said, you know what? Oh, there was a speaker meeting, and I thought, good, I can just sit and rest. And they said, the speaker didn't come, it's you. So I got up there, and I cried for an hour. And I told him, I said, I don't know what's the matter. I've been doing everything I know how to do. And I'm just in this fog. But I want you to know that if all there is from now to the end is fog, that I'm okay with it. Because God is in the fog, and I hear you. And I'm okay. And I got up the next morning and awakened with a list of directions. So I got up and I wrote them all down, just like they came to me in my head. The very first thing on there was, tell your mother and your father that you're gay. Tell your brothers and sisters that you're gay. Tell them you're moving to Dallas. You're going to attend the Perkins School of Theology in the 9-year relationship that you're in. Right? Love God. Now, I looked at him and said, are you out of your goddamn mind? He said, yes, and I recommend you start right away. Now, my family knew I was gay, but it's different when you get the memo. So I went to my mother and my father, and I told my mom, I said, Mom, I said, I love you. And nothing short of me being convinced to the bone that this is God's will would ever make me leave you. But I have got to go. I said, I got to go to Dallas. I said, I'm going to go to school. I said, Mom, I said, I'm going to go to the Perkins School of Theology. I want to become a minister and I'm gay. And I didn't want to stop talking because, like, she knows the rules of conversation. And if I stop, she thinks it's her turn. And so I just kept talking and talking and talking. And then I ran out of breath. And my mother, my very Catholic step in when the Pope's not available, mother, who, by the way, don't miss this. If at the end of my life, I have grown to be even a shadow of the woman my mother is, I would have accomplished great things. My mother looked at me and she says, I love you more than I love my other children. And I love you more than that because you are gay. There is absolutely no doubt in my mind that this is God's will for you. I love you. I'm with you. Not only do you go with my support, you go with my blessing. And I said, Mom, about Dad, she said, I got him. So I went to my brothers and sisters and I told them I was leaving, and they were heartbroken because they were going to miss me. I'd helped them with their kids, and we'd just all done that the whole time I'd been sober. But they said, you know what, Brenda, you have put your life on hold for our children. Go. We'll miss you. But go. And I left, and I went and I started working, and I got a job at SMU. I don't know how. The lady called and she says, I'm calling about the application you filled out online. I have no idea what the hell she's talking about. I said, I am not kidding. I said, oh, yes. She says, I was wondering if you'd come for an interview. I said, yes. I said, I'll be there. So I drove to Dallas from San Angelo, about 300 miles. I sat down with this woman. 10 minutes later, she says, do you want the job? I said, well, I think there's been a mix-up. I said, I didn't actually want to work here. I wanted to go to school here. I want to go to the Perkins School of Theology, and I think something got crossed up. She said, well, do you know that if you work here at SMU that you can go to school for free? I said, are you shitting me? Which I gather is not the thing to say. So I started going to school. I moved on November 9th and started work November 10th. I was looking for a home group and a sponsor before I was looking for an apartment. That's how it goes. And so I started going to school and stuff, and the people that hired me found out I was gay, and they put me on a prayer list, and it didn't work. And then they were mad. Now, the people at school, they didn't care. But the people at work, they cared. And then the lady came to me and she said, you know what, you can't work here no more. And I went and dropped out of school, you know. And when I dropped out of school, I was on the dean's list in my first semester. But that's not a problem because God knows that that's the deepest desire of my heart. And I think that one day it's going to happen. But it wasn't that day. And so I'm like talking to God, and I'm like, I don't know, whatever, what do you want? And he said, I want you to go on this job interview for the Dallas Independent School District. And I had already taught for 6 years. I'd already paid back my karmic debt from Catholic school. I had nothing. You know? So I went on like 4 interviews. Everybody loved me and no one hired me. I got up the morning of the 5th interview and I looked at God. I said, you know what? I'm not fucking dressing up anymore. Okay, this is it. I'm going on one more interview. Either get your shit together or I'm not going. Amen. So I went on the interview. The guy says, well, I got a music and art position available. I don't know anything about music and art. I said, I'll take it. And so I started teaching there. I started teaching there in September. And on November the 4th, my sister calls me. I'm on my way to work. She said, Dad's sick again. And then I remembered something that had happened when I first got sober. And what had happened, see, the reason that my relationship with my dad was different was that when I had first started working in 97, my sister called me at work after my first week of school, and she said, Dad's sick and he's going to have surgery and you should come to his house. And I didn't want to go, and I went anyway, and I went back into the back room where my dad was, and he was sitting on the bed, and for the first time in my life, he looked like a little old man. And like a little four-year-old little boy. And I sat on the bed across the room from him, and I looked at him, and this question came to me, and it was, Brenda, can you do for your dad what he could never do for you? And I got up from that bed, and I went over, and I sat next to my father, and I sat next to him so that my knee touched his knee, and then my shoulder touched his shoulder. And I looked at him, and I said, Dad, I love you. I want you to know that I think you are an exceptional man. That of all the men that God could have given me to be my father, I'm so glad I got you. I'm not leaving. And my father stood up and he put his arms around me that day, and I put my arms around him for the first time in my life. And we had spent the last years as the best of friends. And when I started working for DISD, and then on November 4th, my sister called and said, Dad wants you. You got to come. And so I called work. I said, I can't go to work. I got to go to San Angelo. And so I went home and I packed my stuff, and my father was very ill. And it was hard for me to be there because I'm supposed to be at work. I just started this job. And I would tell my dad after a couple of weeks, I said, Dad, I said, I'm going to go back to Dallas for a little while. I said, but I'll be back on the weekend, okay? And he said, don't go. So I called my job. I said, I can't go, man, you know. I said, I got to stay. And they're like, you know, we can't hold your job. I said, I know. So I stayed with my dad. And I held his hand, and I got my guitar, and I sang songs, and I do what I did. And my dad got very, very sick. And on Christmas Eve, a year ago, my dad died. I had been the one that was giving him his medicine, and I went in the morning of Christmas Eve, and he was desperate, and I knew it, and I leaned up against him. It was 1:30 in the morning, and I put my hand on my father's chest, and I closed his eyes with the other one, and then I just rocked him. And I rocked him, and I rocked him, and everything that had ever been written on the pages of my soul by the people in Alcoholics Anonymous found its way into my father's soul. And then he died. And the children in my family, they didn't get it. And so I explained to them, I said, Grandpa, he had to go to a party. And so what's with the hole in the ground? I said, that's where the train comes to get him. They may never get on the subway. And so we buried my dad on December 27th, and all the kids were there, and we did that, and my little nephews come to me, and they said, but we forgot Grandpa's favorite song. And so there at my dad's gravesite, in our Christmas voices, we sang Jingle Bells. And I wanted to come here today and give you everything I had. But I'm here to tell you that I'm a sober woman in Alcoholics Anonymous, that the quality of my life for me today is based solely on the success and the quality of my relationships. I am who you see, and you see who I am. I was in a workshop the other day, and I said, you know, before I was sober, when I was drinking, people used to use words like cheater and liar and ass and stuff, you know, to describe me, you know. And now I'm sober, and if you go to the women who know me, and if you go to anybody in my home group and you ask them, tell me who Brenda is, they'll tell you things like, you know, she's really honest, and she really cares. And she's an ass. progress, progress, progress. I wanted mostly to give you what you came looking for. All morning I asked God, please, please give them what they've come in search of. I know it's not me. I think it's you. Fill them until it hurts. Fill them until they can't help but go from here and be changed. Men and women in Alcoholics Anonymous, if you're one of the people in Alcoholics Anonymous who feels left out, sit next to me. If you're one of those people who doesn't feel quite popular enough, fuck them. There is hope here. There is God here. And there's enough. There's enough because you are enough. I would have walked to Florida to tell you that this morning. I love you. My life is messy. You know? But it's my life. I told God, if you help me stay sober, I promise to do everything, not to miss one more moment of it. God has kept his promise, and now I must keep mine. The night before I came, I was at home with my little nephews, and we made cookies. Now, I didn't actually read the directions. I didn't know. I don't know how. I don't bake, you know. I don't even cook. We're in trouble, okay? But it was one of those sheet cookies, and you're supposed to have cookie cutters, and they were the Easter ones, you know, and you were supposed to, like, decorate them and stuff. And so I get the dough out and realize we've run into some technical difficulties, and I did have cookie cutters, but they were Christmas ones, and so I'm cutting the cookies with the little kids, and they're like, now why are we making stars? Because it's all I have. But, you know, but if it's all I have, they're Easter stars. And we're just gonna make these great cookies, and we did. And I have a picture of my two little nephews sitting. Sitting at my house in front of the oven with the oven light on. Waiting for our stars. I wish you everything you want. I wish you everything you're afraid of. I wish you God. I'm going to close with this. Still more wonderful is the fact that we need not be specially distinguished among our fellows to be useful and profoundly happy. Service gladly rendered, obligations squarely met, troubles well accepted or solved with God's help. The knowledge that at home and in the world we are partners in a common effort. The well understood fact that in God's world everybody is important. The proof that love freely given surely brings a full return. The certainty that we are no longer isolated and alone in self-constructed prisons. The surety that we no longer need to be square pegs in round holes, but that we fit and belong in God's scheme of things. These are the permanent and legitimate satisfactions of right living, for which no amount of pomp and circumstance, no heap of material possessions could ever substitute. True ambition is not what we thought it to be. True ambition is a deep desire to live usefully and to walk humbly under the grace of God. Do the work. Do it messy. We will surely meet some of you as we trudge the road of happy destiny. And if you don't do one other thing, for God's sake, get in the van.